Welcome to the Sunshine Economy this week. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Beginning in July, if you have health insurance and go to an in-network hospital, but a doctor who is not in your insurance plan's network helps you, you aren't supposed to get a surprise bill. A new law is designed to stop what's called balance billing, the practice of charging a patient for medical care delivered by doctors outside their insurance network, even when the care was done at an in-network facility.
Sammy, this is really a small effort toward more clarity for healthcare prices. It's not exactly price transparency for healthcare, though. Healthcare often is complex, and pricing can be confusing and convoluted. Just listen to state lawmakers and regulators talking about healthcare pricing on a single day during the legislative session, during committee meetings back in January in Tallahassee.
Healthcare is the only place where the charge doesn't match what's collected.
I'm really thrilled at this growing realization that billed is one number, charged is another, collected is yet another, cost base is yet another. We're beginning to appreciate that these are all quite separate from one another.
People get confused about charges versus costs. So I'm not talking about charges. I'm not talking about what we bill the patients. What I'm talking about is what it really costs us to deliver that care. Does that make sense?
If it doesn't make sense, you're not alone. Copays, deductibles, in-network, out-of-network, coinsurance, monthly premiums, patient responsibility, negotiated rates, negotiated discounts. All these phrases describe some part of the price patients pay for healthcare. Could it be made more clear? Well, last fall, Governor Rick Scott put it this way.
Food's a necessity. Do you know what you pay for food? Absolutely. Before you buy it, you know exactly what you pay. If you're going to buy a car, you know what you're going to pay for a car. If you're going to buy a house, you know what you're going to pay for a house. Shouldn't you know exactly what you're going to have to pay for healthcare?
Attorney Steve Weissman makes this comparison.
If you went into a department store, and three people in front of you were being charged $19 for a shirt, and when you got to the cashier, they charged you $199 for the exact same thing, everybody would recognize that's absurd, and all kinds of consumer protection organizations would help you.
Weissman used to run a hospital in Hialeah for a short time. Now, we'll hear more from him later on in this program. WLRN has launched a reporting project aiming to help better understand healthcare prices. It's called Price Check. It's a database of prices that healthcare facilities shared with our partner, Clear Health Costs, and costs contributed by you, the community in South Florida. Price Check is a tool that you'll be able to find on our website. It does two things. It lets you share your healthcare costs with the broader South Florida community, the charges from the doctor or the hospital, what you paid, and if you have insurance, what your insurance paid. The second thing it does is allow you to see what other people paid. You can find it at WLRN.org/pricecheck.
Healthcare and health insurance takes up an increasing share of our economy and paychecks. According to the World Health Organization, the U.S. spends more of its national economy on healthcare, almost 20%, than any other nation. And the Kaiser Family Foundation finds that the average Floridian getting health insurance through their job spends about $1,400 a year on premiums. Their company spends another $4,300. Charles Lockwood is the Senior Vice President of USF Health and the University of South Florida.
I always joke, it's not a joke, Starbucks spends more on healthcare than coffee, GM spends more on healthcare than cars, and that is really not sustainable.
So still to come on our program here today, one of the biggest private employers in South Florida and how it deals with healthcare insurance costs, healthcare costs, and the impact on employee paychecks.
Benefits are complicated. And so the reality is that until you need it, until it's personal for you, it's not something that you think about. This is a major part of people's lives. And I think as people get older, they think more and more about healthcare coverage.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy. We're talking about healthcare prices today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. We've launched our project Price Check, a crowdsourced database of healthcare prices in South Florida. It's a reporting project to better understand the cost of healthcare in Florida. You can search the database and you can add your prices to it at WLRN.org/pricecheck.
If you're like most people younger than 65, you probably get your health insurance through a job. It's a system that began to become the norm in the decades after World War II. For workers, the money you spend on your employer-based insurance premium is taken right out of your paycheck before taxes are figured in. That allows you to pay less in taxes. By buying insurance with a group of people, your coworkers, for instance, or your spouse's coworkers, the hope is it reduces the risks and thus can reduce the cost.
The bigger the company, the idea goes, the more workers buying insurance, potentially lowering the cost of insurance for each person. For companies, paying a portion or all of that health insurance premium is figured into the overall cost of a worker. Running all this at the cruise line Royal Caribbean is a big job. It has more than 74,000 employees around the world, and 6,500 of them are in South Florida, making it one of the biggest employers here. Paul Parker is the Chief Human Resources Officer at Royal Caribbean. He goes by the HR dude.
I think the interesting thing about our company is that there's very few companies where people live where they work. And that's really the big differentiator. And there's very few companies where people are away for their families for 12 weeks at a time. So to figure out the way to create an employee experience that says, I'm not distracted so I can provide the best guest experience possible is really what we're striving for.
Parker spoke with us about the challenges of insuring the employees of Royal Caribbean. He started by talking about the balancing act faced by all employers, big or small, finding the best health care coverage for the money.
Well, I think that we make trade-offs, and we try to make sure that people understand that this is our goal, is to make sure that we're being flat for our employees while enhancing the benefits. And at the same time, for our employees, we constantly kind of survey what things do they want, and so that we can design the plan for every individual. So if you're a single 20-year-old, you may not want to pay for insurance because you're healthy and you're invincible, so we try and create a high deductible plan. If you're a person that has a family, four kids, where they always are getting hurt, you may want to be in an HMO that allows you to pay a visitation fee, I like to call it, right? But have a low premium. And then so if we can provide three or four plans for each kind of spectrum of employee that we have, we feel like that we got great plan coverage, and at the same time, we can maintain our cost. And the real key for us is, I think you see a movement going more towards wellness and preventative care. And if we can incentivize our employees to stop smoking, to work out, do those things, we see our incident rate go down, which also drives our premiums down.
Even within South Florida, Paul, you have a geographic reach. How many different insurance carriers do you work with for health insurance locally?
One, actually. We just use the Blues. And I think
Florida Blue.
Yeah. And so that's that gives us the chance to leverage and, you know, to kind of say, like, if you guys can't remain flat, we can go someplace else.
And what kind of response have you had in that engagement in the past year in this position as you've been with the Royal Caribbean, as you've engaged with your insurance carrier?
I think our insurance carriers always like to cite how the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare has impacted them, and they guess got to impact us. And we like to have that discussion and say, we have a lot of numbers, and we can go elsewhere.
How involved are you in the networks? How much negotiation is there between you and the insurance companies about who's going to be in the network?
I think what we try to do, if we were going to make a switch, and say we were going to go with another insurance company like Aetna or somebody like that, one of the key things we would want to know is what is the coverage, and we would just want to do a comparison to say what was going to be the drop off and kind of the doctors that were in the network that were going to go out of the network before we would make that switch, because it's a large communication to our employees. Because while you may think like, hey, I'm giving you $5 less a month that you have to pay, they're going to say, great, my doctor's not in the plan, I'm not happy. And so if there's a huge percentage of drop off, we would have to figure out if that was the right thing to do or how we would enroll those doctors.
And how do you balance that communication with your employees between what is available to them versus what they are asking for?
I think it's a year-round effort around saying these are the things that we're thinking about. Benefits are complicated. And so the reality is that until you need it, until it's personal for you, it's not something that you think about. So dental care is like one of the simplest things, like just getting people to go get their teeth clean and say, like, this is free, right? And if you educate people that before you have to go get
it. Well, it's not free. It's free. It's no additional payment after the monthly premium.
Well, it's a lot cheaper than getting a tooth extracted, right? So if you think about it that way, that if you keep your teeth clean and you can do it twice a year and you get your x-rays every 4 or 5 years, preventative care and the education around preventative care is really what drives your incident rate down and really what drives your premiums down over time. And so it really is a year-round kind of exercise of surveying and asking people what's important to them and then figuring out how we do our plan design. And then at the same time saying, like, what can we really afford if we want to keep the employees' portion of the premium flat?
You are a large buyer of healthcare services via your large employee base here in South Florida. What do your employees want when it comes to the healthcare services and finding that balance between service, convenience, and price?
Every individual is different, right? And so when we talk to our employees, on whole, I think people they don't want to see an increase in their premiums. and they want to maintain the medical coverage that they have, and they want to see enhancements, and we try and do enhancements on preventative things. But everybody's different, and I think when you're new parents, like, you probably all of a sudden you switch your coverage from maybe an indemnity plan to you go into a PPO or an HMO plan because you know you're going to have multiple Medicare visits. The other thing that we find is that people are very interested in having HSAs and FSAs from a standpoint of being able to kind of be a little bit more predictive when they know they have a high school daughter that's getting braces.
Flexible spending accounts, healthcare savings accounts. Some of those are pre-tax dollars that can go to healthcare incidents.
Correct.
How has the plan design changed through the years at Royal Caribbean to address some of those employee desires, specifically in terms of trying to lower their contribution to the premium or at least stem the tide of the increases?
I think we want to drive our employees into the most effective things for them. And so we try to differentiate the pricing, and we try to tier the pricing from a standpoint of where we want our employees to go that kind of benefit the company, but at the same time provide them coverage. So we've done some different things around pricing. We've done some different things around deductibles. And we also did some different things around prescription, because prescription becomes a major piece of medical debt.
What percentage of the total monthly premium does Royal Caribbean contribute for the employee?
I'd just say north of 80%.
North of 80%. And is there a contribution for an employee spouse or employee child as well?
So if an employee spouse has the ability to have coverage someplace else, we make them pay a premium if they want to take our coverage.
Meaning they pay
a surcharge, let's put it that way. A
surcharge. And that's in addition to their...
Let's just say it's like a one-time fee that you would pay.
I see.
Because your spouse could get medical coverage at her employer.
Gotcha.
Or his employer, but you chose ours, which increases the likelihood of incidents, which ultimately drives your premium up.
Sure.
So you want everybody to get insurance someplace else.
Sure.
And we'll pay you if you take insurance at your spouse's.
And in addition to that surcharge, are you still paying north of 80% for that family member?
Yes.
For an employee who doesn't take advantage of the Royal Caribbean health insurance benefit, they get an additional compensation for not participating?
So just like we would charge if your wife wants to be on, or it's your husband or your spouse, we would encourage you, if your spouse has health care, to take their health care.
And how do you do that?
So we would monetize it. So it would be like a one-time payment.
A one-time payment. And to some degree, it would make up for that 80% cost that Royal Caribbean would be providing.
Not completely, though.
Not
completely.
All right. Okay. But it ultimately becomes cheaper for Royal Caribbean.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
As you go through this annual process of health insurance design for your 6,000 employees locally, how sensitive are you to doctor networks, to office visit copay rates, to deductibles? How much are you looking at the cost of the care itself?
We look at it almost every 6 months, because once we finish the plan design for 1 year, we start the plan design for the next year. And so I think we try and get as much data as possible to say what our employees actually using, so that besides what they desire, you may want something but never use it. And we pay for it. And so we try to figure out where we can modify things that may make it cheaper for the company and doesn't impact the employee. And so we're very sensitive to it because it's competitive. I mean, this is a major part of people's lives. And I think as people get older, they think more and more about healthcare coverage, post-retirement, those types of things. Maybe not so much as a younger employee.
How involved are you with the negotiated rates with the providers themselves and the insurance companies?
I would say we obviously have some partners and some consultants that help us with this, but ultimately it's our decision because they're our employees. So we got a lot of people that help us get to the right place, collecting the data and making the right decisions, but ultimately it's our plan design and our total rewards team works very hard on the design and the actual execution.
And have you ever seen something in your plans where you've been able to say, this is a thing that our employees use, we want it at a cheaper rate, and worked around something like that?
To be honest with you, it would be how easy is it to substitute, right? Because I think if the reality is, if it's something that everybody uses, but you can't substitute it with something else, like it's like drugs or prescription drugs. Like, not, you can say we're just going to use generics and we're going to reward employees to take generics, right? And so you can drive that down. But if it's something that's not easily substitutable, there's not a lot of influence that you can have on it, even from a volume standpoint.
And one of those things that's not substitutable sometimes is geography.
Correct.
Are your employees communicating anything regarding the price of healthcare services that they're paying after your insurance kicks in?
That's an excellent question. I mean, tough question too. To be honest with you, I don't think we've asked them that. I have to think about it, but I don't think we've ever asked them, like, how do you feel? We ask them how they feel about their coverage, how do they feel about the network, how do you feel about the premiums that you pay, the service that you get, the availability of the services in your area, do we have the right amount of coverage? But I don't think we've ever asked them, like, how do you feel about after your copay, you know, after your insurance kicks in, the part that you pay. You know, I think employees in general really care about the quality of care, because I think if your child's sick or your child is injured, the last thing you're going to worry about is, it going to cost me $50 more to go to this hospital. But so if this is the best hospital, it's near my neighborhood, I want to make sure it's in the network.
You're the chief human resources officer for 6,000 employees locally, for 50, 60,000 employees across the globe, Paul. What has been the impact of the healthcare portion of compensation on employee compensation?
It's one of the interesting things when you talk about total rewards, because it's a major piece of the pie. And I think most companies don't spend enough time educating people on saying, because people think about their compensation as the cash that they get in their check versus kind of the premiums that we pay for them and the availability that they have for healthcare. And it's as employees kind of mature that they start, that becomes a more and more relevant fact for them. And people start to make decisions on where they become employed based on the type of healthcare that's provided, especially if you just say you have a special needs kid or something like that. So we do a job where we call our total rewards, where we kind of paint the picture and kind of show the pie, so to speak, and say, this little sliver of cash that you get is just that, because a major portion of it is the benefits we provide and the premiums that we pay for you.
How do you connect the dots between what the negotiated rate of something is and somebody's take-home pay at the end of the month?
So we do a lot of sensitivity analysis around paycheck impact. So if you raise a premium, let's say like $100, because it goes up and it's still the 80-20 split, let's just say, the reality for somebody that makes a little less money, that makes $40,000, $55,000, is huge, because now all of a sudden you say, this is $2,400 that just impacted this person's paycheck. And the benefit may not have changed. And so it's hard to explain to somebody why you're paying $2,400 more for something and I don't see an increase in benefit. And so that's where you really have to be creative around design, and you have to be sensitive around paycheck impact from a standpoint before you start increasing premiums. And you may want to do something that says, I'll keep the premium flat, but I'll increase the deductible. It doesn't really impact you every day in your life. So raising the premiums is the last thing we want to do when we do plan design. It's much more around, how do we not impact people's paycheck, but actually impact their behavior on the way that they go spend their time with the doctor.
Paul Parker is the Chief Human Resources Officer at Royal Caribbean.
Still to come on our program, when a lawyer becomes the head of a hospital and gets an inside look at pricing.
Our system is absolutely broken and heartbreaking in terms of the economics and how patients are treated.
We're back on Price Check, the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Price Check is a reporting project examining the cost of healthcare in Florida. You can help us untangle healthcare prices by using our Price Check tool to upload your prices and see what other people paid. You can find it at WLRN.org/PriceCheck. Stephen Weissman is a healthcare and commercial litigation lawyer, and for a period in 2013, he was the interim president of Palm Springs General Hospital in Hialeah. The previous head of the hospital had been a friend and client, and when he died, Weissman stepped in. What he saw while he was there turned Weissman into an advocate for healthcare price reform. What did you find when you started running that hospital?
Well, this hospital was run great, followed all the rules and regulations, but what I learned is that our system is absolutely broken and heartbreaking in terms of the economics and how patients are treated.
What do you mean by broken? What did you see specifically that was surprising to you?
One thing that rose to my attention was I couldn't find out how much competing hospitals were getting each year as contracts were negotiated with insurance companies. And it kind of shocked me that that information was secret, since all consumers also need that information.
Put me in the room when the negotiations started around these contracted rates. This was the first time you'd sat in on one of these things?
I didn't even sit in on them. I just know that we had people who were negotiating the insurance company rates, and they were complaining that they thought we were getting shortchanged and that the competing hospitals were getting higher rates. So my question was, okay, how much are the hospitals down the street getting? And they said, we can't find out. It's confidentiality agreements.
To which you said?
I had to go check. It was hard for me to believe that that could be a secret, since every member of the insurance company, everybody who has a policy, needs to know that information. You know, at that point, I didn't do anything about changing the system, because you're in an unchangeable system. It was a very hectic time, because the person who had passed away, my client, managed every aspect of the business, and I was trying to fill that gap. But what to do about it, I had time to reflect on after I left the position as the interim president.
After you saw just how secret the pricing is, what did that change about how you saw the rest of the healthcare system?
It's been talked about for decades that the rates of increase in terms of exceeding the inflation rate are unsustainable, and nothing's ever been done about it. It's not a coincidence that healthcare is the only industry where there's no real prices. In effect, the healthcare industry is really on the honor system, and the honor system is not working. For example, the only place where healthcare is not on the honor system is Medicare, because Medicare has set rates. And in Medicare, it's recognized that price gouging and fraud are so widespread that to protect the U.S. Treasury, there's a special Medicare fraud strike force. Hundreds of doctors, physicians, people involved in the industry are arrested, charged with crimes, and huge penalties are imposed. But if you're an individual, you're not a Medicare patient, you're on your own. And because the actual pricing is not disclosed, if you're price gouged, you can't even determine what the price was supposed to be. And there's no consumer protection for patients, unlike any other industry.
You wrote about these things in an article that got published in the Florida Bar Journal. Tell me a little bit about what you laid out in that article.
Well, I think the newest thing that I put in that article that I hadn't seen anybody write about anywhere is that when you go into a hospital, any hospital, you're signing a contract that says you're agreeing to pay their ordinary, reasonable, customary rates, language like that. And the truth is that they're what their so-called charge master prices, which is basically their list prices, those are only charged to the nowadays roughly 10% of people who don't have health insurance or who may get stuck out of network, not covered by health insurance. But 90% of the people who go into a hospital are paying negotiated rates. They're all different rates, but they're negotiated by health insurance companies. So if you happen to be out of network or not have insurance, and the hospital sends you a big bill for their list prices, I made the argument in the Bar Journal article that it actually constitutes fraud, because they've misrepresented to you that those are their ordinary list prices, their generally charged rates, and they're not. And in Florida, actually, the law is, which people don't generally know, that regardless of any contract you sign with a hospital, they're only allowed to charge you a reasonable price.
What happened next?
I was hoping the world would change after I wrote that article, which of course it didn't. And I began a petition on change.org called End Predatory Healthcare Pricing. Over 100,000 people signed that petition, which just simply made the point that it's necessary to have real prices in healthcare, because health insurance premiums, which is what our politicians generally talk about, they're just a straight arithmetic function of underlying costs. If you don't reduce doctor's bills, hospital bills, pharmaceutical bills, there's no way to make a substantial dent in the cost of health insurance.
Stephen Weissman ran Palm Springs General Hospital in Hialeah as interim president in 2013. Earlier this year, the hospital was sold to Larkin Community Hospital of South Miami for about $40 million.
Still to come, how healthcare pricing could affect the company that you work for.
This is Price Check, the Sunshine Economy. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson. We're inviting our listeners to help understand healthcare costs in South Florida better.
And I'm Sammy Mack. Price Check is a crowdsourced database where you can look up prices and add your own. The more people who contribute prices, the better the tool becomes. It's all at WLRN.org/PriceCheck.
The majority of South Floridians get their health insurance through their employer. It's about 40% of the population in Florida. If you get your health insurance through your company, how much control do you have over those costs? What's the impact on your take-home pay, your bottom line? Three executives join us now here on the Sunshine Economy. Chuck Fallon is CEO at First Service Residential, a property management company based in Dania Beach. He leads over 3,000 employees here in South Florida and several thousand more nationwide. Christopher Gould is managing director at Jungle Island with 400 seasonal and full-time employees. And Robert Taylor is owner and president of BBI. The company employs 40 people here in South Florida who work with candy and snack food makers, getting their products in vending machines, convenience stores, and grocery stores. To all three of you, welcome to the Sunshine Economy. Chuck, let's begin with the size. You're the largest employer here of this company, of this group here. What's your experience and First Service Residential's experience been with healthcare costs?
It's been a pretty agonizing process over the last several years. The economy has become, or this economy has become more highly regulated and getting more so, it has impacted our business model as a company, and it's been incredibly difficult to manage through the minefield of regulation that we've seen. The regulatory requirements have increased and forced us to look at the world differently and change how we provide these kind of benefits to our associates.
How has it impacted the business model, and has it impacted pay and hiring expectations for First Service locally?
I would say over time it has impacted some of that. We look at our associates in a holistic fashion, so not just healthcare benefits, but also the opportunity to grow, the opportunity to become a more effective employee and grow their own personal life in the organization. And so it is a component, but it is looked at holistically. We've also had to focus on more consumerism in how we look at the healthcare costs that they have to pay.
You're a self-insured company because of the size that you're in. Robert, I want to ask you, you're the other side of the spectrum, 30, 40 employees locally. You're in the small group market. That's what that's called in the health industry market. What's your experience been with the cost to BBI and your employees?
Well, our experience has been a lot like Chuck's, just on a different scale. It's a very challenging from a time standpoint and from a management standpoint. And as a small company, we have some distinct disadvantages in sourcing healthcare based on the lack of size and the lack of scale, and which translates nowadays into a lack of choices for our company and therefore for our associates. And again, even as a small company, or even more so as a small company, we're interested in employee retention and recruitment and retention on a long-term basis. So we want to offer the best possible package to our associates, and it's very, very difficult to do in this one aspect. We feel like we do that in other areas, but in the healthcare area, it's a very challenging proposition to give best in class to your associates, which is consistent with our culture.
Christopher, finally, I want to ask you, you have the, pleasure of working at Jungle Island and managing Jungle Island right in the hot spot of the South Florida economy, tourism, hospitality, seasonal workers, hourly wage workers. What's your experience been managing Jungle Island's healthcare initiatives?
Well, unfortunately, it's been a constant escalation of costs over the years, and that it doesn't quite fit well with the tourism-based jobs that we have. It's held down wages because the employer contributions have gone up and up. We make significant contributions towards the benefits that our employees have, and it makes us have to make some tough choices, unfortunately.
Such as?
Well, holding down wages is a big thing. And then with the Affordable Care Act, we fall, like many restaurants and tourism outlets and hotels, we have a high proportion of seasonal workers. We have a high proportion of part-time workers. And we find even that there's definitions that are in conflict as to what constitutes a seasonal worker, and that weighs on our minds and the efforts that our executive team has to put into solving this puzzle.
And you were saying earlier before the show started that you employ a lot of people for whom this is their first job. How do you talk to new employees, people who are new to the workforce, about their benefits and explaining healthcare?
Well, we try to bring in a lot of experts to assist in this. You know, we feel a responsibility to help counsel our new employees that are entering the workforce for the first time. Probably about half of our workers are in this position. And it's difficult when our experts don't even know the absolute answer to a lot of the things that have hit employers over the last couple of years. So it's challenging, but we work with them. And I'll tell you that it takes up more of my time than it ever did in the past.
Chuck and Robert, how about that from an executive time point? You know, your time is valuable as leaders of your company. You need to invest your time and your management skill in places that's going to pay dividends for your employees, for your owners, for yourselves. Chuck, how about it? Talk to me about the time management that this requires and the investment for First Service Residential.
I would echo what Chris said. It has been, in the last 3 years, such a changing landscape. Not only for us in how we manage those costs and how we stay competitive in providing those benefits to our associates, but also in how they buy healthcare. So one of the biggest challenges we've had is in educating them as to the choices that they make. Certainly, we have to filter those choices at the outset, but how they go about making those decisions has become much more critical to their own pocket and to how they take care of their families. That's a huge challenge, especially when you're talking about a universe of 3,000 people. And so that takes up a lot more of our focus as an organization to ensure that there's plenty of avenues for that and that they've been given the tools that they need to make great consumer decisions.
And when you talk about filtering, we're talking about two things, right? So there's that step where you are buying or you are selecting the insurance plans that will be available. And then within that, educating your employees around how they shop?
Correct. Absolutely right. So our fiduciary responsibility to our associates is to ensure that they've got plans that are competitive in the marketplace, that they are able to take care of their families. No, we're not gold-plated, but we do strive to be competitive, again, to provide a holistic benefit package for them that they can support their families with.
Robert, how competitive from a small group standpoint with BBI and your 30 to 40 employees in South Florida, how competitive do you find the health insurance market? How competitive do you find the health services market in terms of the doctor's offices and the hospitals?
Well, yeah, it's a challenge to us relative to recruitment against large organizations that have the scale to offer programs that are frankly better. So I don't find it particularly competitive, and we find it expensive from two standpoints. One are the plans that we have to fund and the cost to our company, and two is the dealing with recruitment and running up against superior plans and having to overcome them financially, which really ends up being a double level cost.
In terms, you just wind up paying an employee more, a prospective employee
Correct.
More in salary.
Correct.
To make up for what they're going to have to contribute to a higher cost
At times.
Healthcare plan.
Yes.
Yeah. And has that impacted your hiring through the years? In other words, has it reduced hiring?
Well, you wonder if it's sustainable if you're on a growth pattern, and we have been. It hasn't, I wouldn't say that it has slowed it at this point, but it certainly makes you more measured, which I suppose is a good thing in one sense. But it's certain, it's an additional cost, and it's an additional cost on several different levels.
Robert Taylor is owner and president of BBI, based in Broward County. Christopher Gould along with us, managing director at Jungle Island. And Chuck Fallon is CEO at First Service Residential. This is Price Check, the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson along with Sammy Mack. We are talking about our new price healthcare price tool at wlrn.org/pricecheck. You can look up the price of common health procedures, but you can also contribute the prices that you have encountered in the South Florida market. Chuck Fallon, you've got the largest group here at this table. How price sensitive are your employees to the healthcare that they want to purchase and the healthcare coverage that they get through your company?
It's a great question. At First Service Residential, we do have a lot of sort of entry-level roles in our organization and some very seasoned professionals as well. And with the Obamacare phenomenon, that has heightened everyone's awareness. So I would say it is a critical decision point for all of our associates and something that we take very, very seriously. And I would say it is a very influential decision for retention as well as new hiring decisions.
Robert, how about from your perspective? The Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, has gotten either a lot of credit or a lot of blame for the focus on healthcare costs. The trends that you're experiencing with your associates at BBI today and the higher costs that you're experiencing as a business executive, do you attribute those to the ACA, or are these trends that you have seen even prior to Obamacare?
Well, I think you'd have to say that prior to ACA, there certainly were costs were certainly trending higher. So that's not unique to ACA. But I think the what ACA has delivered is more complexity, less transparency, and more cost. Because one of the stated purposes of ACA, is, if I understand it, is to decrease cost. I certainly haven't seen that happen.
Or at least to reduce the rate of cost increases.
Correct.
Yeah.
You mentioned transparency. For you as employers, when you're selecting your plans or when you're dealing with your employees, what would transparency, meaningful transparency, look like from where you're sitting?
Well, I think transparency would be something that would help us educate our associates as they looked at their real-life healthcare needs. And we struggle with that right now because even within our own plans, a lot of that information is opaque. And it's hard to see exactly how it gets applied in real life when you go see your doctor and they send you for an x-ray at the hospital and you find out that it costs five times what it would have done if they'd sent them to an outpatient imaging center. Those are the real world struggles that as leaders that we know what's going on in our employees' lives and we want to find the best for them, and we hear these situations arise, and any information that we could get to assist them would be welcome.
I think at First Service Residential, our plans have shifted from the traditional PPO copay plans to consumer-directed plans. We certainly try to provide the tools through United Health, our provider, to help them make better decisions. Having even deeper transparency in terms of what a specific procedure might cost at a particular hospital or through a particular doctor would certainly help. Those are a little fewer and farther between, but insurance providers like United Health are helping us narrow those networks into higher quality, more effective cost channels. So providing that kind of transparency, I think, is a good opportunity for us over the long haul.
And Chuck, your company is self-insured, so you're carrying your own risk. How involved do you get to be with the negotiated rates between your carrier, in this case United, and the providers, the hospitals, doctors, imaging centers, and all that?
We don't get directly involved in that process, but United Health does provide us with options that allow us to assess what's best for our population of associates. And so we try to make those effective decisions based upon the cost and the benefit, but they do that in the background.
Two final quick questions. All three of you have a corporate or a company contribution to the employee-based healthcare plans. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Unanimous. And all three of you has increased. Has the plan design changed, putting more of a financial responsibility onto the employee?
Yes, I can tell you that it's increased on both ends for us. Our costs are higher and our associates' costs are higher.
We have not passed it on to our associates at this point, but it does affect a lot of the decisions we make in terms of wage growth and hiring.
And Chuck?
Costs have gone up for our associates, but in line with the cost to the company. So there hasn't been a disproportionate burden put on our associates, depending on the plan that they choose. So if they have migrated to a more consumer-directed plan, they have tended to minimize the increase or manage that increase accordingly.
That's Chuck Fallon, CEO at First Service Residential, also joining us here on Price Check, the Sunshine Economy. Robert Taylor, owner and president of BBI, and Christopher Gould, managing director at Jungle Island. To all three of you, thanks for joining us here on the Sunshine Economy. Still to come in our program, using technology to bring price and quality transparency to healthcare.
There's so much opacity right now to healthcare, and it's in part because of a lack of transparency, but it's also because information to a lot of these institutions is power.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy Price Check. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Sammy Mack. A project like Price Check, creating a crowdsourced database of healthcare prices, would have been impossible a decade ago. But technology has democratized all kinds of data. Think of how you used to buy airline tickets before online travel sites. You used a travel agent you trusted to find the right price on the right flight. Today, you act as your own travel agent using websites that collect ticket prices from most of the airlines, so you can shop on your own.
Technology has allowed massive amounts of data to be gathered, sorted, searched very quickly. So how can technology help bring clarity to the complex world of healthcare pricing? Daniel Kane thinks it can. He's an economist and entrepreneur. He's the co-founder and CEO of Modernizing Medicine. It's a software company that manages digital health records for millions of Americans through their doctor's offices.
Healthcare pricing is a really interesting beast because we're living in a time where there's not much transparency to healthcare pricing overall. Not only have the governments not really been forthcoming until very recently with healthcare pricing, but the payers don't really share in their data. But beyond just the price of healthcare, we really want to know what the quality of healthcare is, which providers are providing the best service at what cost, because that's really what people want. Consumers want and employers want to know, how do I get the best outcomes for my employees or my patients, but also how do I take care of myself and my bottom line?
It's an important conversation to have, but where does it begin then? With the pricing transparency or the quality outcome transparency? The outcomes one can quantify and see, and there is a lot of discussion about that, but there's not much discussion about the cost of those outcomes.
Well, cost is something that's very easy to measure, and we have cost data today, and so providing transparency on cost should be the first and easiest step, but that in a vacuum is quite dangerous. And we could look at something that seems to cost very little, but the outcomes may not be desirable, and so we need to really look at both cost and outcomes at the same time.
When you say that the pricing data is easy and out there, what do you mean by that?
Well, costs are just numbers, and we are very good at tracking what claims we pay and how much dollars we pay. So there's not a lot of work that'll be needed to be able to aggregate that data together, collect it, and most importantly, lift up the veil and have transparency on pricing. Outcomes data is going to be a bit more complex. You have easier things to measure, like hospital readmittance rates or disease severity. But on a disease-by-disease basis, there are different outcome measures. And what we need to do as a country is agree on how are we going to measure disease, how are we going to measure success, and look at it as both a cost model as well as a cost-benefit model.
How would you gauge the conversation when it comes to pricing, though? Is it a transparent pricing model that you're seeing evolve within healthcare and the clients that you work with?
We're seeing certainly industry move towards transparency, and those that are taking advantage of it earlier are getting the benefits of a better reputation by being more transparent, both in their outcomes and in their price. However, as an industry, I think healthcare still has a long way to go to really lift the veil on healthcare cost and healthcare benefit. And as a country, both CMS, the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Services, that is the most reimbursed in this country, is really doing a great job now in providing data. However, the data that they have is cost data. It's claims data, as it's known, which is really just what you paid for something and what was reimbursed, not necessarily if it made you better.
Speaking of claims data, as you mentioned, folks who have insurance can look at their own claims data, their EOBs, their explanation of benefits to find out how much an insurance plan that they've been paying a monthly premium for knocked down what a hospital or provider was paying. Is that transparency?
It's transparency, but it's a game that's been played now for 20, 30 years where, you know, you set a price and someone else will have a different cost and you get a deduction from that. So you feel like you're getting well taken care of because you got, you know, 80% discount off of what the list price was. But that's just financial engineering. Now, at the end of the day, we've got a fantastic hospital system. We've got excellent providers that are providing great services and taking care of patients. The cost models have gotten really out of control, and something which the entire government is trying to rein in is just this perverse incentive of a fee-for-service model, where doctors and hospitals are, for the most part, still getting paid based on services they render, tests they order, things they prescribe, rather than how do I keep the patient from getting sick? How do I control their disease? How do I get them out of the hospital faster? We're seeing a major shift in the next 5 to 10 years that reimbursement will shift from a services provided model to a performance-based model, or what's known as a quality model. And quality is going to be trickier to measure. So the systems, like Modernizing Medicines and others, have to do their job in actually measuring quality, measuring performance, and creating comparisons within our system from one provider to another so that they know, they're not guessing, they know how do they stack up against their peers.
You have made your career in technology, and you've made this second company now, Modernizing Medicine, within the med tech industry. What role does technology have in bringing light to not only those quality measurements, but that pricing measurement so that a consumer, if or when he or she is lucky enough to be able to shop for a medical procedure, is able to put those two things together in a real meaningful way, as opposed to, as you mentioned, the games that have been played, to use your phrase, over the last 30 years?
Well, starting with the providers, they'll need to use systems that are based in the cloud, because only by having access to all of the information at once can you actually create a benchmark, can you create a comparison.
And what information is that?
Well, that's everything from the amount that was charged or amount that was paid to, more importantly, the outcome. As reimbursement shifts to this new performance-based model, reimbursement is going to change for the providers based on a comparison of how they performed versus others. And unless you are using a cloud-based system that can aggregate and de-identify all of this data, providers are going to just be guessing if they are outperforming their peers. It's graded on a curve, much like when we were in high school or college. It isn't just an absolute measure anymore.
That cloud-based model certainly could benefit a company like Modernizing Medicine in the electronic medical health record industry. A number of transparency tools that have come to market have been driven by employers, have been driven by healthcare providers, and in some cases driven by the payers, the insurance companies as well. How do you judge the validity and the usefulness of some of those tools in today's market that is still focused on an employer-based insurance market and a fee-for-service market? Doctors, hospitals, and others get paid per test, per service provided.
So the quality of data is really tied very much directly to the size of the data and how accurate it is. So you need to make sure you're looking at a data set that's comprehensive. Typical small payers in smaller states will have a very small data set, but it may be representative of the market they serve. You really need to look at the larger data sets, the national payers, the governments, to understand, as a nation, what are we paying? But there's huge disparity in cost and outcome data, which is what the data is revealing. You know, you can get one surgery in New York, the same exact surgery in New Jersey across the bridge, and one is 10 times more expensive than the other, and the outcomes may be the same.
Hospital providers here in South Florida will say you can drive 10 miles between two right. different institutions and get a 40% difference in terms of what they're being reimbursed from insurance companies versus what a competitor is being reimbursed. And of course, that trickles down to the insurer or the patient, him or herself.
There's so much opacity right now to healthcare, and it's in part because of a lack of transparency, but it's also because information to a lot of these institutions is power. And what we need to do as a consumer market is demand pricing transparency. We need to demand also to see what the outcomes are, because there may be a very legitimate reason that one hospital, say, is charging a premium because they have better technology, they've made bigger investments, they've recruited better physicians. But without understanding both the cost and the outcome, we're just guessing.
That was Daniel Kane, co-founder and CEO of electronic health records company Modernize Medicine, based in Boca Raton. I'm Sammy Mack.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Wanda Miles is our technical director. Thanks for listening.